This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Ashton Mara. With the new academic year underway, some university police across the state are rolling out new or improved active shooter trainings for students and staff. But is that training enough? Ann Lee reports.
On a sunny afternoon, I asked West Virginia University students, have you ever been through an active shooter drill?
Not that I can remember, maybe in like elementary school, but I don't really remember it.
It was in my high school, and we just had to go on like lockdown drills and like hide.
I've never had any active shooter training.
And if you haven't, what would you do if a gunman entered the building right now?
I would just try to get away from the shooter.
I would throw the nearest thing at them. I have a drink in my hand. I have a mic in my face.
I would just like panic and run and like not know what to do.
I have no idea what I would do.
Those are the serious questions university police departments across the country and West Virginia are encouraging students and staff to ask themselves. Some schools nationwide are helping them answer those questions by making optional video training available online or through classes. The videos, which show the audience how to defend themselves during a shooting, are produced by a variety of entities, including Homeland Security and private companies.
As the untrained descend into helplessness, the trained individual commits to action based on his survival mindset.
Officers' own training, though, is more hands-on, often involving drills in campus buildings when school isn't in session. They often train with other police departments as well so that they can support each other if a real emergency occurs. Here's Shepherd University Police Chief John McAvoy.
We were able to train with simmunitions, paintball-type things. It's the same thing. It's the same size handgun. It's the same size long gun that we use on a daily basis. And we had an area that was a mocked-up residence hall. We had classroom that was mocked up. This was in the old gym.
But one terrorism expert with the Ohio Department of Homeland Security thinks that the country isn't doing enough to prepare civilians for an active shooter emergency. Lieutenant Joseph Hendry says civilians are way behind the bad guys when it comes to strategy.
You're not ingraining people by having them watch a video. I pull people out of the audience. We barricade the doors in the classroom. I show them how to use countermeasures. I show them swarming techniques. I show them how to move. I mean, we are so far behind the terrorists and the active shooters in training and their thought process. That's why we keep losing so many people.
Hendry says the only way to be fully prepared for an active shooter situation is to practice regularly, the same way we practice fire drills. But Hendry says implementing a drill, any drill, is simply a matter of bureaucracy. In fact, fire drills and fire codes took 64 years to implement nationwide. By now, he says, some of the active shooter training taught in the country is outdated. For example, lockdown, the procedure in which you hide quietly under a desk with the lights off, was designed for a drive-by shooting at an outdoor campus in 1993. It's hardly useful for a gunman indoors, and Hendry says it's why mass shooting victims are often killed by execution-style shots. They are sitting ducks for the gunman.
There's states that require lockdown drills 5 times a year. So by the time someone comes to a university setting, they may have practiced sitting in the dark on the ground and not moving 65 times. They will do that automatically. In stress level, you will default to the level of your training.
Hendry says that often police departments copy each other's active shooter policies for the sake of expediency. But one WVU student, Cheyenne Wallace, has a different story. Her high school in Lebanon, Pennsylvania, held yearly active shooter drills. The type of training at her school started after the 2012 Sandy Hook shooting in Connecticut that resulted in the deaths of 26 elementary school students and staff.
We would push all the desks against the door. We would put like books in our book bags and wear them like in the front to protect like your chest and all the vital organs and stuff like that. And then we were told like where we keep like river rocks in our closet so that if someone would come in, like you can kind of like throw the rocks at them and whatever else the teachers had in their desks.
Awesome. You think think that example would have been better if they'd have showed, I mean, putting the desk in front of the door. I mean,
West Virginia University desks. Police held an active shooter training session earlier in the summer for students and staff. The training entailed watching two videos on preventing and surviving acts of violence, followed by a vigorous question and answer session.
What do you do if, well, let's just use Jack's, for instance, it's all glass, and there's an active shooter outside.
And you're behind this glass?
We're behind, and there's no place to hide.
We got a problem.
West Virginia University Police Captain Danny Camden says the videos are a good way to prompt audiences to seriously think about what they would do if confronted with an active shooter.
If you've never watched a video, if you've never done anything and never stopped to think about what would I do if this happens or that happens, you're at a huge disadvantage. You can very easily find yourself just like the deer that jumps off the side of the road into the middle of the road, and here comes a car at night head on. Should you jump left? Should the deer jump right? Well, it doesn't really matter whether you jump left or right. Just don't stand there and think about it too long.
In other words, the videos can take students and faculty one step closer towards surviving an active shooter emergency. For West Virginia Public Broadcasting, I'm Ann Lee in Morgantown.
This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Ashton Mara. It's 7:50. Mostly sunny today with increasing clouds in the north, a slight chance of rain and thunderstorms. Highs today in the 80s and low 90s.
Support for the weather forecast is provided by Erie Insurance, putting service first since 1925. Local agents available at erieinsurance.com. Public radio means listener-supported radio. Today, listener support is more critical than ever to West Virginia Public Broadcasting's operating funds. Call 1-800-RADIO-87, 1-800-723-4687, or go to wvpublic.org.
The West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission says too many college students in the state are dropping out. The agency says students are becoming discouraged when they go to college and are placed in remedial courses to strengthen their basic math and English skills because those classes don't count for college credit and the students still have to pay for them. State education officials say they want to change that trend and increase the number of students who are actually completing their degrees. That's why faculty and staff from the state's four-year institutions met last week, looking to choose a new course of action. Dr. Corley Dennison, the Vice Chancellor for Academic Affairs at the Higher Education Policy Commission, spoke with Beth Voorhees about the new methods higher ed institutions are working to put in place to increase the college completion rate.
Right now, traditionally, what we've done for over 40 years with students that didn't meet particular cut scores or weren't prepared for college is that we put them in non-credit courses to remediate them, to bring them up to the level to be able to do college-level math and English. What we found is that really doesn't work as well as it should. We have too many students that don't complete the gateway course being that general education course that allows them to go on and take other courses.
And this has been a problem for years where high school students come out not prepared for college work, so they have to take these remedial courses to bring them up to speed in math and English.
That's correct. And as a matter of fact, in the four-year schools, about a quarter of the students do not meet the cut scores, are not prepared for math particularly. A little bit lower for English. Community colleges, it's higher. Some of the community colleges are high as 60%. So it's a significant problem. And this delays the students' ability to be able to get through college in a timely manner because they have to take these courses that are no credit courses. And in fact, there's a stigma involved. Just being in a developmental course, we have found students are one-third less likely to graduate than students who are not placed in developmental courses. And think about it. I mean, back when we were in college, what did they call courses like that? Bonehead.
Oh, that's right, yes.
Bonehead math, bonehead English. So, you know, obviously there's a stigma just by being placed in these, even though it might be that you don't test well or you had a bad day that day. You know, maybe you don't need the entire 3-credit full semester. You just need some kind of push to get out. So clearly there's a stigma. Clearly these students don't finish school as well as students who are not placed in the developmental courses. So the time has come that we need to rethink how we do this. And this is also particularly true because students now pay dearly for their college education. It's different than when you and I were in school. As a matter of fact, I remember, and I think probably a lot of people in college have the memory of the administrator standing up there and saying, look to your right, look to your left, one or two of you will be gone by your junior year. And we can't have that. We can't have that anymore. These students are paying significant amounts of money in order to get a degree. And if they leave, they still owe money. They still owe the debt. So it's the morally right thing for us to do to make every effort we can to see that these students succeed.
So what did you discuss? What are you going to try?
So this is where co-requisite comes into the picture. Co-requisite is a system where students take college-level credit-bearing courses. So they're in essence taking the Gen Ed course when they come in their freshman year. However, what our policy says is college-level credit-bearing with required academic support. So if you go back and you look at the high school students that took the ACT test last spring, we had about 11,600 that took the ACT score. 40% of them scored between a 19 and a 16. A 19 is your proficient score in math. So we have about 40% of the students that are just below that cut score. What co-requisite does, they come in, they take the college-level credit-bearing course, but they also get required academic support, which could be an extra class session. It could be extended time in the regular. It's some kind of extra help that gives students that push. Those students that are at the 17, the 18, probably don't need an entire semester, three credit hour, no credit course in order to be remediated. They just need that little push to be able to get through the general education course. And we found if you can get through that gateway course, that your chances of graduation become significantly higher. If a student can get through gateway math, gateway English, and complete 30 credit hours in their first semester, their chances of graduation skyrocket.
Has this worked in other places? Are you modeling this after other states who have done this?
Yes, but we're also a leader in this. There's about five other states that are doing this. It's Georgia, Indiana, Colorado, Tennessee, and West Virginia. Tennessee, Colorado, and Indiana are a little bit ahead of us. And they're seeing really strong results. Now, here in West Virginia, the community college system went all in with this in 2014. So we kind of used them as a pilot. And so they adopted this system. Prior to 2014, the pass rate for a gateway course in math was 14% after the first year. That has jumped to 62%. So English went from 37% to 68%. So it's math and English, but in West Virginia particularly, it's math.
What's the timeline here? When do you want to start implementing this at the university level? And when do you expect to start seeing the results of this change?
First of all, some of the universities that have already started moving on implementation with this. So whereas the community colleges started from ground zero, some of the universities have already started implementing this. So, we're telling them that by 2018, we want 80% of all students requiring remediation to be in co-requisite courses. And then we hope by 2019, that'll be 100%.
Dr. Corley Dennison with the West Virginia Higher Education Policy Commission, thank you very much.
Thank you, Beth.
That was Vice Chancellor for Academic Affairs at the Higher Education Policy Commission, Dr. Corley Dennison, speaking with Beth Voorhees. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. You can keep up with the latest West Virginia news throughout the day on our website, wvpublic.org. Support for our news bureaus comes from West Virginia University, Concord University, Marshall University, and Shepherd University. Our director is Teresa Wills. I'm Ashton Mara.
And good morning. I'm Beth Voorhees. Thank you, Ashton Mara, for taking over the microphone this morning so that I can speak to listeners directly about the importance of providing support to West Virginia Public Broadcasting. Call now at 1-800-723-4687. Individual contributions from thousands of listeners like you give West Virginia Public Broadcasting the money we need to pay for the programs you listen to every day. Today, we're asking you to join them by making a contribution of your own. A gift of $5 or $10 a month will not only pay for the hundreds of hours you listen throughout the year, it will ensure that your favorite programs are available for the next listener to discover, a new generation to discover, all for about a dollar or two a week. Call 1-800-723-4687 or give online wvpublic.org.